It's time, Fort Wayne. Your sports, your station.
It's the Sports Rush with Brett Rump.
Covering all the topics that hit a nerve here in the Summit City.
Clark, 11-yard touchdown!
Only on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Now, here's your host, Brett Rump.
The greatest, most interesting, most important person of all time.
You are incredible!
Yeah, well, you're half right. This is amateur hour. This is gonna be huge. I believe this is gonna be our finest hour. Just when I think you said the stupidest thing ever, you keep talking. I think that's the worst thing I've ever heard. That boy ain't right. The simplest way to put it, I have problems.
Welcome to the alleged show.
What a Tuesday afternoon. Taking you home, it's the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. Getting down to the end. USA against Iran. What's the latest on it, Adam? We got to get updated on what's happening with USA and Iran.
Yeah, so we're in the 8th minute of extra, you know, stoppage time after 90 minutes, and it's still 1-0 over Iran.
And that would put the USA into the next round.
Yeah,
I don't know what it is. It's like, you know, and the voice would be the knockout round or something like that. Whatever they call it in the World Cup, but it would advance out of the group stage, USA. And they had to have a win. Iran only needs to get a tie.
Ninth minutes of stoppage time now.
How much do they have?
That's a lot of stoppage time.
The last match that they had only had 4 minutes of stoppage time.
Yeah.
Well, you had the injury where the guy took the bad spot. Yeah.
Oh, he gave it his all.
He certainly threw everything he had into it. Including his future, but he ended up scoring the only goal, and so far the USA has made it stand up. And I got a chance to see about 10 minutes of this, and
we've just gone full time, and the United States has won.
There we go, we're a winner, USA.
One to nothing.
USA, there we go. Everybody, honk your horns for the USA men's national soccer team advancing in the World Cup. I don't know why, because I could care less about this team. Not, you know, 99.9% of the time, right? They play all these friendlies, the international friendlies. They play other competition, whatever they play. I pay no attention and don't care. But World Cup, I feel good about this. I feel good about the U.S. getting a win.
Oh, yeah.
And over Iran, too.
Yeah, it's a great win for the team, and we'll go on to the knockout stage, which is awesome.
The knockout stage, is that what it's called?
I would call it the knockout stage.
We'll call it the knockout stage, sure.
Why not?
So USA moves on 1-0 over Iran today in World Cup soccer action. So now I guess we can actually get to the actual show at hand, right?
We can
forget the play-by-play of USA soccer. Or is it USA football? Should we ask Peyton Manning?
Well, according to the guy that scored the goal, it's called soccer. So
that's right. It is definitely soccer. Last night, had a chance to watch the Indianapolis Colts in action on Monday Night Football. Oh, wait a minute. I said in action. I should just say watch the Colts. That first half was as bad or worse than the Colts-Broncos game, right? I mean, the Colts get the national stage. How are they not being flexed out of national TV? I'm a Colts fan, and I don't want them to put them onto the national stage. I'm like, don't show the country what it is we actually are cheering for, because it is an embarrassment right now. Of course, the second half, the Colts actually came back and played pretty well.
Yeah. The third quarter, yeah.
Yeah.
That was great.
I mean, kickoff return and Matt Ryan completed his best, but there's a lot of problems with the Colts. And then you get down to the end. And yes, there were time management issues. You've got to use the timeout, okay? Because you don't know, the next five plays in a row could all be sideline plays or incomplete passes. You may not need to use a timeout. I mean, when you have a situation in the last minute, I think up until the point there's a minute left, I don't care if you let the clock run. Because if you have a minute with three timeouts, you're in good shape. But when it goes from a minute and you're losing like 20-some seconds, because to me, if you're not going to use the timeout, you got to get the snap off in about 7 or 8 seconds. You got to get to the line of scrimmage, line up, know what you're running, snap the next play. The Colts didn't have a play call ready. They weren't lined up. What was it, about 20-some seconds burned off for the Colts?
Mm-hmm.
And they could have taken one of their timeouts. Well, Jeff Saturday took a lot of heat over his time management. And I'll just say this, okay? I'm not ready to blame this game on Jeff Saturday's decision whether or not to use a timeout, because there's a lot more that goes into it than just those last few seconds, whether the coach is calling a timeout. Because at that point, an offense that was that inept, getting extra plays to be more inept, might not have made the difference anyway. But the Colts certainly had valuable time running off the clock. And the reporters, of course, doing their job, asked Jeff Saturday about it after the game.
Yeah, I didn't feel like time was really of the essence at the moment. I thought we had a good play. I thought we would get to... Yeah, and I felt like we would get to it. You know, obviously we don't do great on the backside, so it's worse than it, you know. But I felt good about the call before. Felt like we had time. We would have timeouts afterwards. We were in striking distance. So, yeah, I never felt like the pressure of needing the timeout. I thought the call was good. And, we were in that mode pretty much the whole second half. So it was pretty consistent with what we were doing. So, again, it wasn't like a change for us. We just didn't execute it.
He's making it up on the fly, basically, because there is nothing in there that makes complete sense. There's not even a completed thought. It's like, yeah, we felt pretty good. We were in range. Oh, and we had a play call, and I've been doing that the whole game, and we thought we were in good a position, and we were where we wanted to be. And I mean, it just seemed like there was nothing there that really answered the question. The question is, why were you saving the timeout and letting so much time burn off?
Mm-hmm.
Here's the thing. What's a play? Each play goes about 6 seconds, right? If you're at the 30-yard line, how many plays do you want, ideally, to get a shot to score? 6, maybe 7, maybe 8? Okay. Well, that, you know, now if you're saying, okay, it takes 6 to 8 seconds to run a play, and you want to run 6, 7, or 8 plays, or at least be able to get to that as a maximum, that means you need 50, 60 seconds.
Yeah.
The Colts were letting it run down to, what was it, 30 or 40?
Yeah, 30. Yeah,
yeah. And
there.
So, at that point, too much time ran off.
Yeah.
Blank. That was too much time, and it was poor clock management. Now, today, I understand that Jeff Saturday's backtracking a little bit, saying, in hindsight, I wish I'd have taken a third down timeout. But here's the thing. All of this is blinding us, or kind of, it's like the shell game. I mean, it's one of those smoke and mirrors type of thing,
mm-hmm.
where all of our attention is on Jeff Saturday and his use of the timeouts. Where we should be looking is Matt Ryan, and why the heck did you go to your slide 2 yards short of the first down?
He did slide pretty early.
Nobody
there.
5 yards. He had 5 more yards. He easily could have gone. He slid 2 yards shy.
He's very conservative.
And that forced the Colts to make a third down call where they ran the football for nothing.
Nothing.
And then put them in the fourth down situation with the running clock, and they had to take their first time out to set up the fourth down play, which ended up failing. The Colts could have gotten a whole new set of downs if Matt Ryan, on that big sprint up the middle of the field, would have just taken it 2 more yards before he went to his slide. And he had the space to do it. The game was on the line. He had plenty of time while he was running to look over and see, where is the first down stick? I got to make sure I get past it. And instead, he goes to the slide a good 2 to 3 yards short. That's the biggest mistake. It's not whether you call the timeout, because Jeff Saturday never have been should have been put in that position anyway, because Matt Ryan should have gotten them a first down, so they didn't have to run the football the next play. They could have gone ahead and run a pass. And the delay from the box by, was it Frazier Parks? Is that his name?
Parks Frazier, yeah.
Parks Frazier.
You got it?
Yeah. Sometimes I get the names backwards.
It happens.
But the delay in getting the play down was probably in part because he had to determine whether or not it was going to be a first down where the ball was going to be spotted.
Mm-hmm.
you know, if it's third down less than a yard where they spotted after he went to the slide, then you're probably running a quarterback sneak. If it's third and two, or let's say third and two and a half, then you're probably handing it off to Taylor. If it's third and three or more, you're probably calling a pass play. And so there may have been a delay in getting that play to the huddle because Parks Frazier, he wanted to see exactly what the down and distance was. The problem is, in doing that and making a determination on a play call, the clock was running and too much time ran off. But that comes right back to Matt Ryan. He's a veteran. He should know better. He's in there because of this exact type situation. Fourth quarter comebacks, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
He's been terrific in his career, fourth quarter comebacks. And he made a huge mistake by going to the slide 2 yards short of the first down stick.
Yeah, absolutely. We actually already have some listeners weighing in on the Colts on our Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862, if anybody else wants to jump in. Someone said, the Colts just stink. Matt Ryan never hits a wide receiver in stride. It's always catch and fall to the ground. And I like Saturday, but he really messed up at the end of the game by not calling a timeout. And he probably realizes that today. We have heard him kind of backtracking. And then they said, fire Ballard.
Yeah. The personnel is not good. And we've got the problem comes with wide receiver.
Yeah.
Because Michael Pittman, how many times do we see him make a big catch? Alec Pierce completely disappeared in last night's game. And this is against the 31st ranked pass defense in the entire NFL. Mm-hmm. There's only 32 teams, and the Steelers were ranked 31st in yards allowed through the passing game. Joe Burrow, a week ago, threw for 355 yards against him. You've got to get separation if you're a wide receiver. If you can't separate in that situation and get yourself open and be able to be a target. And time again, when they showed that full view screen, you could see the Colts receivers were not getting separation. Now, here's the other part of that. Matt Ryan does not throw the ball all that great vertically. Almost every pass he was throwing in the game last night was 6 or 7 yards, maybe 8 yards tops. Okay, so a defense that has scouted the Colts probably knows you have to defend the short, you know, intermediate part of the field. In other words, defend between the 5 to 10 yard sticks. And what that does is it brings the corners up. It brings the safeties tight. They're not worried about getting beat deep because there's not that much breakaway speed for the Colts at wide out. And the Colts don't use it much. They don't use a deep vertical pass. And so everybody's crowded in the line of scrimmage. That makes it tougher for those slant patterns. You're always in traffic. I think it affected the tight end.
Yeah.
Jelani Woods, I think, when he had the drop because he was running through traffic trying to cross the field because everybody's up there within 10, 12 yards of the line of scrimmage. You're not spacing them out vertically. And you've got to be able to spread out a defense vertically and horizontally to create space so you can get runs up the middle. You can get passes over the top. You've got to be able to space a defense, and the Colts do not do it. And Pittsburgh's too smart a team, and Mike Tomlin's too good a coach to not catch that on video and say, look, we're not going to worry about getting beat deep. We're going to worry about those 5 to 10 yard throws that move the chains. And too many times the Colts, even if they completed a third down, it was 3rd and 7, and they completed a 5-yard pass.
Yeah, absolutely. Someone actually texted in, Brett, wake up. Alex Pierce did not disappear last night. He was 10 yards downfield, which is 6 yards past Matt Ryan's arm strength for throwing.
That probably was true, yeah. Maybe he actually got out of range for Matt Ryan's eyes. Because I will tell you, when you get to Matt Ryan's age, things are harder to see in a distance.
You have some experience with that?
I do have some experience.
And then another listener texted in, how about the botched handoff to Taylor at the goal line? That's peewee football stuff.
No, you know what I texted last night? I said, tanking. It's obvious. Why else would you hand it off and at the chest and have Jonathan Taylor almost reach and knock it away? And then, to make the tanking a little less obvious, Matt Ryan jumped on it.
Fell right.
Realized, oh my God, I've recovered this fumble. This is not going to be good.
Let it go.
This is not going to be. And so he handed it to the next closest guy, which happened to be one of the Pittsburgh Steelers defenders, because didn't it look like Matt Ryan clearly jumped on the football?
I thought he had it, but then I guess he kind of rolled and it came on top of him, and then the other guy was able to get
it. Well-disguised tanking right there. He actually made it look like, oops, the ball just slipped away, went right into the gut of the Pittsburgh Steeler defender. But I'm like, good Lord. And then they actually scored to take the lead. Mm-hmm. And I thought, what happened to the tanking? I mean, I have no idea what's going on now. I thought maybe they had perfected the art form of tanking, and then they come back and score, and I'm like, well, this isn't going to help anything.
Yeah, that's what I kind of thought. You know, all this late game clock management talk kind of overlooks the fact that the Colts did what they always do and got off to a really slow start.
Oh, and that's the point. We never should have gotten to where late game situations mattered, because the Colts were so miserable offensively in the first half. Play calling was terrible. You know what? Joe Buck and Troy Aikman should have called the plays. They had headsets on. They should have just changed the channel of their headset, and instead of it being broadcast, it should have been right to the sideline where our quarterback could have heard them, because they're sitting there saying, you've got Jonathan Taylor and he's not running the football.
Yeah.
They were pointing out the obvious.
We actually got a text about that. 46862, someone said, the star of Monday Night Football was Troy Aikman for his uncanny ability to mock the Colts in a socially acceptable fashion.
He did. And, you know, and they weren't. And they were pretty politically correct in their targeting of Jeff Saturday. I mean, you know, they questioned, taking the time out and everything. But I think the media has a little bit of a soft spot for Jeff Saturday because he's kind of one of them, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. Part of that fraternity. But no, clearly the first half, the Colts offense was a complete disaster that completely derailed. They couldn't complete anything. When they did have a chance at a completion, they dropped it. Matt Ryan was constantly under pressure. And sometimes I think the pressure, they're like goblins in his brain. I mean, did you ever notice? Sometimes it looks like he gets really anxious, like he's dancing around all panicking in the pocket when there's time to throw the football. Just get rid of it. And instead, he panics and shakes and does this, you know, almost looks like he's going into a seizure in the pocket. And the next thing you know, it collapses. He goes down, a sack, And then he even fumbled one on a sack last night. But was it Jonathan Taylor that jumped on it? The Colts recovered it, but it was just an awful, awful first half for the Colts offensively. Just really, really bad. 46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line, if you'd like to weigh in, 46862. Let's go ahead and take a chance to get up on today's top headlines. I know the big one.
Yes, you do. Well, in the FIFA World Cup, the United States defeated Iran by a score of 1-0 in full time, and they will go to the knockout stages of the FIFA World Cup. And you can hear their, you know, many fans in the background there.
Many.
The Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers said he plans to play this weekend against the Bears after leaving the team's Week 12 loss to the Eagles with a rib injury. He said he got some scans that looked good. And Deion Sanders said that a report stating Colorado has offered him his head coaching job is true, and that he has also received interest from other schools. So there you go.
Possible. I wonder what the other schools would be.
That's what I was thinking about.
Cincinnati?
I don't know.
Liberty? I'm trying to think who has had coaches that have recently left. The Cincinnati lost Luke Fickell, but didn't their assistant got the job in Cincinnati, right?
Yeah, so
I thought the assistant coach in Cincinnati got the Cincinnati job when Fickell left.
Yes.
And then who else? Hugh Freeze left Liberty. I don't know who else. Where else?
Yeah, he's kind of keeping it behind the curtain. Who's offering him the jobs besides Colorado?
46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line. We'll take a break. Still coming up, our guest Kyle Nedenrep will join us in about 15 minutes. We'll talk a little bit of a recap of the high school football state championships. We'll get his perspective, being an Indianapolis-based guy. Kyle, of course, covers high school sports for the Indy Star, does a great job covering not only Central Indiana, but he does cover high school sports statewide. And we'll get his take on what he saw with both Carroll and Adams Central. Plus, hour number two, Greg Rakestraw, also was somebody that spent some time at Lucas Oil Stadium during the state championships. We'll talk to him more about Colts football. Zach Osterman is going to join us at 5:35. It's a packed show on a Tuesday. And, of course, you're connected on the Parkview Sports Medicine text line at 46862. It's the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. You know, it's a special day today. It is Tuesday. You know what that means?
It's Tuesday Times Capsule Trivia.
That's right. It's back.
Oh, yeah.
Shannon Griffith, too weak to play last week. Weak. You know, he hosted the show, but he wouldn't put himself on the line. Uh-huh. I've got people that pay to be guest host on this show that I throw them on the hot seat and challenge them, right? Shannon Griffith comes in here and hosts this show and then doesn't take the responsibility of being challenged by listeners in a game of Tuesday Time Capsule Trivia.
What can you do?
Okay, Tuesdays, just go ahead. I'll just scratch off. No Tuesdays for Griff. Tuesdays are all about Tuesday Time Capsule Trivia. And we're going to play about 5 o'clock today. And and here's why it's a special day. We've got the pizza.
Oh, yeah, I saw this.
Large pizza.
Yep.
The Pizza Hut. But there's something else that we're throwing in as a prize today. A 4-pack of tickets to Comets Hockey.
Woo!
Coming up Friday.
Wow.
Yeah.
There you go.
So not only do you get the pizza, you get hockey. What a perfect Friday night. And that will all come up with Tuesday Time Capsule Trivia just past 5 o'clock. Do not miss it. Stay with us here. Also, Kyle Nedrep is going to join the program coming up in about 6 or 7 minutes. Greg Rakestraw and Zach Osterman coming up in hour number two. You know, the Colts and the Pacers, think about this, Adam. I had some time last night because I had insomnia. For some reason, I took like a power nap at the end of the Colts game. Hour and 15 minutes or something like that. Woke up.
Like a depression nap a little bit?
Depression nap, yeah. Well, speak for yourself. But it's, But it might be, you know, we're coming up on the holidays. I'm anxious to get home, see the family and everything.
I was just thinking the Colts lost by them.
Well, see, now you've got me like sitting in a psychiatrist chair. Or, you know, I was thinking about being down in the warm weather. But no, seriously, I slept for like an hour and 15 minutes after the Colts game. When I woke up, the Pacers were playing the Lakers and it was near the end of the game. And what drama.
Yeah.
What a game last night for the Pacers. Down 17 points in the fourth quarter. And do you realize that it's been like 22 years since, I think it's 22 years since the Lakers had blown a 17-point lead in the fourth quarter? In fact, what I understood was there's been like 380-some games consecutively that the Lakers have held a 17-point lead in the fourth quarter that they have not lost.
Wow.
And the Pacers came back. And, of course, it set up some great drama for a rookie.
He held on it too long.
Nembhard away!
Got it, baby!
Got it! The rookie out of Gonzaga hits the three at the buzzer to win the game!
Hold on, he held on it.
Oh, man. Chris Denary on the call on Bally Sports Indiana. Quinn Buckner joining in. He couldn't stay quiet.
No, you can't.
But that was the drama that I woke up to last night at like 1 a.m., and the Pacers come back, get the victory in Los Angeles against LeBron. And if you remember draft night when they interviewed Ben Mathurin, that he said he would not concede LeBron James as being better than he was. He said LeBron's a great player, no disrespect, but I think I'm going to come in and prove I'm the best player in the league. And he had his head-to-head meeting against LeBron last night. And total points, Mathurin had one more than LeBron. I think rebounds, he had one more. Assists, I think he had one more. But the overall numbers for Ben Mathurin, basically statistically, he outplayed LeBron James last night in their first ever meeting for the rookie out of Arizona. Pacers end up 12-8 now on the season. But think about this. Before the season, expectations for the Colts, really high. Actual results, not so good. Expectations preseason for the Pacers, really low. Pacers are going to tank. They're going to be one of the worst two or three teams. They're going to be in the running to get Victor Wembanyama. And what do we have? a potential playoff team with the Pacers. And I don't feel out of place to say that because the Pacers have done everything that the Colts wish they would have done. The Pacers have evaluated talent, brought in some really good pieces that play well together. They have drafted extremely well over the last 2 years, and the Pacers are on this run without Chris Duarte. Duarte, who played great last year, has actually missed the entire month of November, and the Pacers are still winning basketball games. I mean, there is a lot to look forward to with these Pacers. Nesmith, Nembhard, Jalen Smith, and of course, how about the job by Tyrese Haliburton, setting all-time NBA records right and left? I mean, I saw multiple records. He's got, what, 60 assists with no turnovers in his last four games or something like that. And that's like an all-time record, 80 assists since he's had his last turnover. I don't know. The numbers are just stocking up, stockpiling for Tyrese Haliburton as far as statistics and NBA records. And so you've got a true star in Tyrese Haliburton. And after the game, LeBron James actually called him out as a superstar and said he is one heck of a great player. And so you've got Haliburton to build around. And then you take Mathurin, who turns out to be a great pick. I wasn't necessarily 100% on board when they took Mathurin, but I'm buying now. He's been great. And what's happened is this team is so much fun with the energy they play with and the joy they seem to have playing with each other, that it actually looks like Miles Turner's having a good time and playing good basketball. It's almost like, where has this Miles been? And now, you know, now it's kind of come to the point where you feel there's no chance that Miles Turner is going to stay as an Indiana Pacer, but you watch his role with the Pacers and you're like, you know what? I'd have wanted you to stay if you'd played like this for your entire career. He's defending. He's working his tail off. Last night, he had Anthony Davis, and he was working his tail off defensively. You saw Nembhard with the assignment on LeBron at times. I mean, and these guys took on the assignment and played well and came back from 17 points down in the fourth quarter. But, yeah, did you have a chance to see that game?
Yes, I did. Yeah, that was really impressive the way they came back. And
The Kings next.
Yeah, and really bad for the Lakers, who continue to be terrible.
Yeah, and the problem is you're almost motivating the Lakers even more to make a move, to take the guy that's leading you one of the guys leading you in your charge. Pacers go on to Sacramento. In fact, they arrived in Sacramento in the wee hours of the morning, and they'll play the Sacramento Kings coming up tomorrow night, I believe it is, because the Pacers just played back-to-back in Los Angeles. Clippers, they lost. Lakers, they won. Dramatic fashion. They got the Kings next. Of course, they'll run into Domantas Sabonis. And, of course, that's the old stomping grounds for Tyrese Haliburton and Buddy Hield. They'll get the chance to kind of go back and see the fans and see the guys they left behind when they were traded. So that'll be a fun game. You wonder last night, were there any conversations that anybody had? Did you see anybody whispering in Miles' ears at all, or any talks? I mean, think about it. This is the team there's been rumors or trying to trade for him.
Nanny LeBron doing the little jersey cover of the mouth.
Yeah, LeBron walking up, wiping the jersey over the face, going up and saying something to Miles.
I didn't see it.
I didn't even think to look for it. But, so Pacers are everything that we thought the Colts would be, right? I mean, just they're like opposites of one another. One was expected to be good. They're terrible. One was expected to be terrible. They're good. 46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862. Kyle Nuttenrep, Indy Star, joins us next. This is the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.
This is Chris Denary from the Indiana Pacers on Fox Sports Indiana, and you're listening to the Sports Rush with Brett Rump on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.
Welcome back to the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. Got a text. Came in. What was the latest, Adam?
Yeah, they said all you need is a good coach, and Pacers got one, Colts don't.
Yeah, it's interesting because I really thought Rick Carlisle might not have had 100% invested into this team. And when I say that, that's not a knock on Carlisle. It's just that he came to Indiana out of Dallas because it was veteran squad that just needed to be kind of fine-tuned to rev up the engine and to try to get them as far as possible in the playoffs. And he ended up with a completely different roster, a lot of new guys that don't have NBA experience. And, yeah, he's done a nice job with it so far. 46862 is Parkview Sports Medicine text line. Joining us right now on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline from the Indy Star, covers high school sports like no other in the state. It is Kyle Nedenrep. Good afternoon, Kyle.
Hey, good afternoon. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Missed you Friday. What happened?
Man, if I don't have something written down or directly in front of me, I remember the next day.
Okay, well, I thought, well, we'll give him a second chance. We'll get him on the show.
Man,
there's a few things I wanted to talk to you about, and it was no big deal. I'm just giving you a hard time. But I do want to talk a little bit and get your perspective on what you saw, because, you know, obviously here in Fort Wayne, we get frustrated. We get teams that get down there and then they end up either being overmatched or falling short. We've had some close games. We've had some blowouts, and it's been kind of tough. But you had a chance to see Center Grove throughout the year. They really dominated at the line of scrimmage against the Carroll Chargers. It was a physical mismatch at the line. I thought that was the difference in the game. What did you see that was the difference between Center Grove and Carroll?
Yeah, I think it had more to do with Center Grove really than Carroll probably. And it sounds cliche to say, well, they'd been there before and Carroll hadn't, but I think part of it is that, I mean, Center Grove has been so good the last, 3 years, and really 4 years, because they went, 2019, they made it to the state finals and lost to Carmel, and that team probably wasn't supposed to be there, or you didn't expect them to be. But, and a lot of the what we saw with Center Grove throughout the season was that they, continually got better in the tournament. And I think it partly is, I think the line play, the defensive line especially, got a lot better in the tournament. They had 7 sacks against Cathedral, really dominated that semi-state game to the point where, it was very unexpected because of what Cathedral did to them in the regular season finale. But, I thought that was where maybe they showed the most improvement in defending the pass. That was kind of the one question. I think, it was something I can't remember if we talked about it or, we talked about it in other areas, but that was kind of the one spot where it's like, well, maybe Carroll can take advantage of Center Grove in the pass game, because that was, at times this year really a question mark for Center Grove. But that never really materialized to the point where Carroll could sustain anything. And, I thought the defensive line play and, the running game that just, was kind of the calling card of Center Grove football for years really got much better, as the season wore along. Micah Coyle and Jalen Thomason are both very good running backs, and that offensive line, I thought really won the battle up front. And then they didn't even, need to pass a whole lot. That's been a strength of their team this year, but didn't really have to rely on that too much. But kind of what you saw Friday night was sort of Center Grove football and what they want to do, which is, win the game up front and run the ball. And they do that as well as anybody. And I think we saw that on display, but I think it's going to help Carroll just to play in that game, and the fact that they're going to play Center Grove moving forward, and some other area teams down here. And I see that Carroll team as being a one that's going to be really good in the future.
Yeah, I think they open up with Hamlet Southeastern next year. Here's a thought. Excuse me. Here's a thought. Do you think the IHSAA will ever be able to budget hotel rooms for traveling teams? How much of an advantage do you think it is to be able to be local and not have to deal with the 2-hour drive and all the fanfare buzz of the bus ride down? What do you think about that?
Yeah, I don't know. That's something I haven't thought about too much. But yeah, I mean, it obviously makes sense to be close to home. And, it's an advantage, I would think. But, I don't know. I'd have to ask about that. I don't know what the future might hold for that. But I would have to think, yeah. I mean, it's just by accident or whatever, you're closer to to home, but, you know, I don't know. I mean, I would say that's a factor, but, I, you know, obviously Valparaiso came down here and beat Whiteland, you know, the next night. So I don't know. I mean, it's one of those things that I think once you get out there, I don't know what, you know, advantage that really is or disadvantage that really is.
Well, I know, like for Adams Central, let's talk a little bit about the Flying Jets, who play that early game. And, I mean, when you're 2 hours or, you know, in that vicinity away, and you want to get there a couple of hours ahead, that means the bus leaves at 7, you're up at 5:36 o'clock, and I don't know about you, Kyle, but on Saturday mornings when I was in high school, I didn't even know there was a 6 a.m., you know. So, I mean, it's an early wake-up call, and naturally there's a lot of buzz, you know, and a lot of excitement, so kids don't get the night kind of sleep they usually get. But I just wondered if you thought that was any factor and if the IHSA thinks it's a factor, because certainly they're not going to invest in it if they don't think it's a competitive imbalance. What about Adams Central? That, to me, was a better Lutheran team than the one we saw last year, and I thought the one we saw last year was pretty darn good.
Yeah, I agree, which you know, going into the season, I don't think we would have thought that was the case. But, you know, Jackson Willis, you know, who – no, I don't think any of us knew how he would be as a sophomore quarterback, and he only turned out to be, you know, one of the top five passing seasons of all time in high school football. So I mean, he did pretty well, and man, he's just you know, he puts throws on the money that and I really thought Adams Central played really well. You know, I thought, you know, they were right there playing their style of game that they wanted to play. But man, they, you know, Lutheran gets that touchdown before halftime, and then that sort of changed the, you know, sort of changed the vibe of everything, just because Adams Central's not the team that's probably going to want to have to come from behind against right. Lutheran. So that was a huge play. It was sitting there at 9-7, and you felt like, all right, well, this is kind of going how Adams Central needs it to. But then, you know, the weapons that Lutheran has on the perimeter, their receivers are really good. Micah McKay was, man, he's been good, you know, both years in the state championship game against the Adams Central, and, you know, Devon Jones also, but, you know, in this last game, but yeah, I think Jackson Willis is kind of the difference, I would say, you know, cause I think those teams are both really even. I mean, they played different styles completely, but, you know, the last 2 years, I felt like they were really even, except for, you know, probably just how dynamic and explosive Lutheran is. I didn't feel like that was a blowout game necessarily, but Lutheran just, they're hard to keep down, you know, and I think we've seen that throughout the course of the year. But yeah, they're for whatever, you know, as good as they were last year, yeah, I agree with you. I think they were even more dominant and even better this year.
Well, the one thing that I noticed is nobody's been able to really throw on Adams Central because, quite honestly, the games have been so much of a blowout. They become one-dimensional games anyway. But I thought Adams Central, because of the respect they had for the running game of Lutheran, had to trust their corners man-to-man against really good receivers, and I thought the Lutheran quarterback was putting balls in perfect places for his guys to go up and get it. And, you know, it's tough because you want to kind of cover up what maybe is your weakest link, but I didn't think Adams Central could do it because of how well Lutheran could run the football. They had to go with the man-to-man coverage on the outside and got burned a couple of times for big plays.
Yeah, and it's sort of that's a good point, but you have to kind of pick which one you're going to try to take. And you're almost hoping that, you know, Willis is going to have an off game, basically. And he obviously didn't. I mean, I forget what his numbers, he didn't miss very much. He was like 17 for 19 or something. I mean, yeah. He was just really, really, good, obviously. And yeah, he put some balls in there in spots that were just perfectly thrown. All he had to do, I could have caught some of them. I mean, they're just basically just put them, perfect. So yeah, I mean, you have to, Lutheran runs the ball, you know, really well, you know, but they also throw the ball really well. So you have to kind of figure which one, you're going to try to take away. You know, they try to take the run away, and that exposes you a little bit because those Lutheran receivers are so fast. So, you know, but, you know, Keegan Bloom ran the ball really well. I mean, and I thought really, you know, played about as well as they could, offensively. They just didn't finish a few times. And there was one, I think it was a block in the back, that turned out to be a really key call, mm-hmm. That would have put them, I think, inside the 10-yard line or roughly. And, you know, that shoved them back, and that was a key drive that didn't yield anything. So, you know, there was a few opportunities where you're like, man, I mean, if they can get on top here, you know, it's going to be at least make it a little bit harder for Lutheran, but they couldn't quite do that. And then once it got to 23-7, I think that pretty much felt like it was going to be pretty tough for Adams Central at that point.
One last thought, because I mentioned this yesterday, going back to Carroll. And, of course, we saw that emotional scene after the game where the Center Grove players joined the Carroll players in the big prayer circle in the middle. And we all know the story with Owen Sheely. But I got a sense, just in kind of what I observed in comments that I heard and all with Carroll, and I wonder if you've seen this in the years you've covered state, that maybe Carroll was just satisfied to get there, that that was the ultimate pinnacle for their season, was to make it to Lucas Oil Stadium. And clearly for Center Grove, the mission is to win a state championship. Did you ever sense that maybe Carroll was kind of satisfied with just making it to the game, where Center Grove comes in and they're completely 100% focused in on winning?
Yeah, I would say that's probably, and I think it's partly, it's maybe just not, you don't go into it, I think, probably thinking that, but you probably think it when you're down, and it's pretty obvious that it's not going your direction, and I think probably that creeps in, and I would say, you know, to me that compares with Westfield the first time they made it, which would have been 2020. I felt that way with them, you know, because they hadn't played in a 6A title game up until that point. Now they came back the next year. I think this is kind of a key for Carroll. Westfield came back the next year and almost beat Center Grove, and they fully believed. I remember talking to Jake Gilbert, the Westfield coach, about this, but they fully expected to come and beat Center Grove, and they were a dropped pass in the end zone away from doing it, or at least having the lead in the last minute with putting Center Grove on the ropes. So I think that's something, Carroll, you can look at and say, all right, we made it. We know what it's like. We've been there. Mm-hmm. Now let's go try to win it next year. Because it's something they're not going to say that beforehand, but I think it's probably creeps into your head when you start getting beat. Like, hey, this is a good, you know, we made it here. We saw what it's like. We've been here now. So now, you know, that hopefully we can build on that. We saw Westfield do it. You know, that I thought comparable situation. And then they came back the next year and almost beat probably an even better Center Grove team in 2021. So, that was, you know, so I think that's a story you could probably maybe compare this to, but yeah, I think there's probably that sense, first time making it. I would say that's probably accurate.
More one-sided games than close games. Were there any surprises in your mind?
I mean, I was a little bit surprised by Andrean getting beat by Evansville Modern Day. I wouldn't say that was a huge shock necessarily, but it was a little bit surprising. The 5A game was fantastic, and that Whiteland Valparaiso finish was mm-hmm. you know, that I think there were seven lead changes in all, and that was a great game. So that was surprisingly fun. I thought it would be a good game, but I thought it'd be like 14-13. I didn't think it'd be 35-31. But yeah, I would say, you know, it was sort of a little bit of a ho-hum weekend up until that point, because there wasn't a lot of drama. The Lawrenceburg Chittard game was better than the final score indicated. That was a good game for quite a while. But yeah, I wasn't necessarily blown away surprised, but I would say the Andrean losing to Modern Day in that first game on Friday was somewhat surprising. And then, you know, the 4A game was just, you know, it's kind of been that way the last few years. The South is just way stronger than the North right now in 4A. So, you know, right, and that will probably continue next year, because East Central is really good and they're going to be bringing most of that team back. So And they'll have to deal with probably New Pal. New Pal is going to be really good, too. So that'll be interesting to see. But that might continue at least one more year.
Is this a bump year for Success Factor?
No, there's another year. So it'll basically be the same setup next year.
Okay, because I know we had some teams that clearly would be bumping with back-to-back championships for Indy Lutheran, for example, and back-to-back appearances by Adams Central. But it's this year and next year, and then the Success Factor is what kicks in?
Yep, the clock kind of restarted going into this year, and it was sort of an oddity a little bit because of the pandemic made that a little bit weird. I'd have to go back and explain it. I mean, it was sort of like Chittard played 4A 1 year, basically, didn't win anything, and then went back to 3A for the next 2 years. So there were some little oddities like that. But yeah, 2022 and 23 are now the cycle that we're in. So this is the first year of two.
Want to talk to basketball with you, and we're out of time, but favorite for Mr. Basketball? Just answer that question for me. Who's going to win it?
I would say I would probably put two guys in, kind of Xavier Booker and Miles Colvin, I think, are probably the two that I would put in that mix. But, you know, there's a kid up at Penn, Marcus Burton, I think, has got a shot, too, if Penn makes a run. So I know you asked for one name, but I'll give you three.
No, I take all of them you're willing to offer. But I thought it would be Xavier Booker, end of discussion. So it's good to know there's other guys out there that will give him a little bit of a chase for it. Always appreciate you, Kyle. Thanks so much for jumping on.
No problem. Thanks, Brett.
Yep. Kyle Nedenrep joining us here on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline from the Indy Star, covering high school sports here in the state of Indiana and especially focused on central Indiana. We'll take a break. Coming up, it's your chance. We've got not only the large pizza from Pizza Hut, we got a 4-pack of Comets tickets. It's called Tuesday Time Capsule Trivia. We're going to play it right after the top of the hour, and that is where we're at next. This is the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.